South Africa's government of national unity has been welcomed around the world. It was a binary option for the ANC. They could have gone with the non-constitutionalists, and that would have been the end of the young democracy, many people believe. But they didn't. They went with the constitutionalists, as though one had been able to predict this. You would have made a lot of money in the markets. Because foreign investors are now looking at South Africa and saying, well, maybe it is investable after all. We'll find out if that is a prospect that we can look forward to with Kokkie Kooyman. He's of Denker Capital. Kokkie, our political scientist who is well-loved by the BizNews community, Frans Cronier, said it was a binary choice going into the election and immediately afterwards when it was apparent that the ANC would get about 40 and the DA just over 20, that either the ANC chose the DA and a market-driven economy, or they went, took us back into what he called the Chernobyl option. Well, thankfully, the Chernobyl option was not selected, and the markets have reacted very positively thus far. I guess in markets, people do overreact one way or the other way. How are you reading this?
Yeah. Now, Alex, so indeed, as you say, and Frans said, it was a binary outcome. I mean, even, you know, Wednesday evening, Thursday, it could have gone either way. You know, obviously, we all think that the choice that was made by the ANC, by now President Cyril again, was the right one. And the market's obviously applauding that. But there are many within the ANC who don't believe that. So it was binary. But so you can see, obviously, both local and offshore investors liked it. Money coming in, you could see that in the rand strength. Our market, and there's some very good graphs from JP Morgan, which showed how much selling there has been in the last few years, both by local investors, in the pension funds and unit trust and offshore investors. So you were poised that everybody is underweight. Plus, we know that the banking system is strong. The shares are very cheap. So a positive outcome was always going to result in a strong rally. But one was too afraid to really take that bet. So where to now? You can see today is quieter. Financial shares still up 1-2%. So the big rally of about almost 18-20% in the last 2 weeks, and more of it in 3 days, has taken place. But if you look at just the valuations of the bank shares, I mean, first Rand was trading in 2019 pre-COVID, still at 2.7 times price to NAV. Yeah, it's now re-rated somewhat to 2.2. Absa was trading at 1.6. Just before the election, it was trading at 0.98. It's now re-rated to 1.17. And the others all look the same. So Absa is an interesting one. 1.6 is a normalized price to net asset value as we value financials for a return on capital that it can and has been generating of 16-18%. So if it does just simply 16-18%, which it should be able to do under even the circumstances we had, it should re-rate further to 1.5, let's say 1.6, just going back to 2019. Now, I think as you pointed out at the beginning, and as the political guys are saying, this is not without risk. So for the moment, the market has said, you know, we're heading in the right direction. And there are so many wins that even if they do nothing, simply money coming back into the country, the rand strength will already ensure a further petrol price decrease, which puts money back into consumers' pockets. Inflation comes down. You know, you get the whole positive emerging market cycle that we had in 2003. Similar that we had after Nelson Mandela was elected. Initially, governments have to do nothing. the markets are actually now reacting and will actually put money in consumers' pockets. The extra confidence should be resulting in job creation. And so now the main thing is if the government, the combination of ANC, DA and the other parties can just be sensible, a lot of it will start happening. The confidence will come back.
So just don't score any own goals and you will already have an improvement. Is that a reflection of how badly the country has been perceived internationally?
Yeah, actually, when you said how badly, I thought you were moving in another direction, but there are two points there. One is how badly we were perceived. And just by the way, in Mexico, I've just recently, Claudia Sheinbaum has won the election. AMLO has had his two terms. But she won. She's fairly socialist. She won with a majority up to 70% with another party. The first thing that they started talking about is they want to now use their constitutional majority to change the independence of the judiciary. And what happens? The Mexican peso falls 9%, the bank shares fall 15%. And so here we have the opportunity to cement what we've got, to cement the constitution, to prove that we are a constitutionally driven country, that decisions will be made on that basis, that where we can, we'll now start creating jobs. So I think that change, it shows how poorly we were received or how the concerns that there were, and that was reflected in the outflows and in the valuations.
Just unpack that, if you would, Corky, for a person who's in grade 7. They're saying, well, what is this constitution? Why is it that important that the judiciary is independent and that the politicians can't just make the rules? Because surely we voted them there. They should know what to do.
Well, politicians, and it's not just a good personal here, they get paid and rewarded for doing their job. And generally, if they do a good job, they get re-elected. That's the main goal. But they have a lot of power and they can make very short-term decisions. So the constitution is there. And similar with the central bank, the independence of your central bank is to make sure that the governing party or parties don't use the power that they've got for the 4 years to reward themselves to the detriment of the country. Now, for instance, decision to change the independence of the judiciary. So what you would do as a party, you would appoint judges that would rule in your favor where there are differences of opinion. Similarly as to what Trump is doing, what Zuma is doing, is blaming the judges for judgments that go against him. But the judges must be independent. Similarly, your central bank, if you control the central bank, it's very easy to, for a short while, just let the currency fall, have inflation, but you will initially that is good. People feel better. By lowering interest rates, you get elected again, but you have messed up the longer-term fundamental position of the country. And that's why those institutions, the judiciary must be independent, the central bank must be independent, and you must have a constitution which stands above the ruling party of the day.
Kleptocrats just love autocracies. They hate the media. They hate the judiciary because those are restraints on power. But of course, we know that story about absolute power corrupts and absolute, or rather power corrupts and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. We know it in South Africa only too well.
Yep. It's a fascinating mother-led sessions in our team. Has been doing a lot of work now just on the Irish changes in 1980 and also Portugal. We've been looking at a lot of countries where that made a choice back towards. Well, this isn't a move back towards capitalism, but it is a move back to better democracy, more debate when decisions are made, which should lead to better decision making. And we all know what happened in Ireland. It was the miracle of the 1980s and 1990s, similar country like Georgia, even Indonesia, when it moved away from corruption. So there are many examples of, and the second bad thing, what I thought you were referring to, the South African economy, the consumer has been under immense pressure. Credit has been withheld by the banks because they were too worried about potential bad debts. So, and people have just been too afraid to spend, too afraid to buy new houses. Even you can see that in Gauteng, people can't sell houses. As you get confidence coming back into the economy, people start spending, and that spending will create jobs again. And why am I here? Simply because improved confidence in economy and lower interest rates is really what your financial sector thrives on. Your financial sector is the oil that lubricates a good economy. So as the economy starts doing better, your financial sector benefits through better loan growth, more transaction volumes, more demand for new investments, and obviously lower bad debts. And that's really good for you on the banking side, just as good on your insurance side, because there's more demand for insurance cover, your risk of default lowers. And then where we come from now, where we're still at very low valuations, I think the risk return still favors, investing more in the financial sector because of those attractive valuations. And it's unlikely that we go back to an EFF coalition with the ANC. But, South Africa is a funny place. A lot of things can happen, but that's really, at the moment, that's not the base case. So the base case is very good in the current outlook for your financial sector.
That means, if I'm interpreting you correctly, that even if you haven't bought these shares yet, there is still upside, and you could still story about shares today.
Yes. As I said, you had your initial rally, and now the market will start rewarding things as they happen. The Rand is now, I think I saw, just below 18. The Rand, Johan Elstedt, report recently from Old Mutual, saying that his fair value for the Rand is actually 12. He says in his report, well, it's unlikely it gets there. Yeah, but that's what your Big Mac index and any visit to London or New York tells you how much the Rand is falling. You just buy a cup of coffee there or you buy a beer. So the Rand could quite easily go to, let's call it 16 for the moment, 17. Let's make it 17. Even an improvement to 17 already actually brings inflation down further. That will allow the Reserve Bank to cut interest rates. And every time you have something like that, your financial sector will re-rate further, because lower interest rates means higher return on capital for the banks, simply because your bad debt provisions will be lower, your loan growth will pick up. So I think from here on, you've seen your big rally, initial rally, the further price moves will come as things happen. So as the Rand strengthens, you'll see further re-rating. As the first interest rate cuts start coming through, your bank sector will re-rate further. So it will now be a more of a slower process, I think. But where the valuations are now, I mean, that's the key of investing. If you buy good quality assets when they are mispriced, you get your growth in shareholder value, but you'll get further re-rating as well. And that's, I think, what we're going to see if the ANC and the DA use their common sense and work together. If they work together, I wouldn't be surprised if the ANC gets back to above 40, 42, 43%, because people, once the economy starts performing, you create jobs. People are happy. They'll vote for the incumbents.
We have two of the most prestigious publications in the world as our partners, The Economist and The Financial Times. And both of those titles welcomed the election result, but presumably, and were very complimentary about it. But presumably, it'll take a little while for the international investors to digest that news and to perhaps then say, well, maybe it's not a polecat anymore. Maybe we'll have a nibble. Maybe we'll come through. You've dealt in the global markets for a long, long time. How long is that time span before we would see the change in the view of the international investors, given that we're a developing country, we can only grow if we get foreign capital coming in. But there's no other way of doing it.
Yep. So it depends on the size of the institution. That sounds like a funny answer. You find that your smaller funds, your smaller investors react immediately. Yeah, like let's say I run my global financial fund, I run the Nedbank financial fund. As I could see the reaction to the election and the possible outcome, I pushed all the cash I had immediately into buying SA banks. So, and a lot of my peers and people I deal with regularly in New York and London were sending me emails over the weekend saying, yeah, which shares should we buy? So those guys have already been buying. But now the larger institutions first need to have the investment committee. You know, there's more research that needs to be done. You're getting now your JP Morgans, your big sell side houses that start initiating again on SA banks or upgrading to overweight. Then you get your passive investors who start coming in again simply because it increases in the index. Every telltale sign was when I spoke to banks and insurers a few weeks ago, a lot of them had up to now had no interest from foreign investors. You know, so management weren't even traveling offshore because there was no interest in seeing. Suddenly that's changed. Suddenly everybody wants to, they're lining up to see APSA, they're lining up to see someone, they're lining up. So the interest is back. Now, the size of the institution often determines how quickly they make that decision and how big they make that decision. But the process of interest, as long as we keep doing the right thing now, no own goals, the interest will continue to improve for a while simply because it comes with such a low base.
So it's like having a soccer match with a gale force wind behind you, and or maybe a rugby match. It gives you a huge advantage. But if you go and run back over your own try line and keep knocking on the ball, that would take away the advantage. Just for the public, though, how do the public understand that this is not a bad thing? In other words, that you get many of these commentators saying, yes, but the markets shouldn't determine what we do in South Africa, etc. There does appear to be a disconnect with what affects them practically and what some people believe.
Yeah. So your socialist view doesn't like the market because the market forces efficiency. So the markets will allocate capital to where the best opportunity is away from where the poor opportunity is. So whereas the socialist is thinking more of job creation and the effect it has on labor. The market, if a business is not functioning properly, let's say Eskom, it will close it down with the loss of a lot of jobs. And so that's the negative perception of the market. But the market does do at the same time, it will create new jobs for those people at Eskom. And if you have a good management, they will give them training. They will say, but essentially, the narrative is markets are much better at allocating capital and they force efficiencies. I think we spoke a few times on post office, on the post office bank, on just the whole way post office, how Transnet was run. If it was a private run organization, those people who made those poor decisions that let the port slip to where they are now would have been long ago been called in and been fired if it was a private sector company, because the shareholders will hold management to account. A government-led institution just is never held to that same account. So sloppiness, you know, is easy to, sloppiness and corruption creeps in. And that's really the difference. So what we've done really, and that's really why the market in short are excited, we've taken a step back from this, from cadre employment, from corruption, from making decisions for where it suits the decision maker's pocket, to at least where there's another party or more parties involved in making those decisions that will allow better decision making and capital to be allocated to where it can create jobs, and where South Africa could grow at a 3-4% GDP rate again as a state instead of its 1%. And that's, by the way, for the man in the street, he will see that, he and she will see that in jobs advertised, in demand for labor, in more competition, in higher salary increases, besides just the lower interest rates.
Cookie, just to close off with, pre-election, and clearly if you're an international observer, you look at South Africa, you look just to the north, the disaster called Zimbabwe, and you think, well, South Africa's probably going to go in that direction, or it might go in that direction. What percentage pre-election would you have put on that possibility happening, and what percentage would you put on it now? And I'll clarify that a little. I remember some years ago that Yanni Mouton from PSG said, at the time there was a lot of negativity, he said, I put no more than 10% chance of South Africa going the Zimbabwe route. So that would have been from a person like him, and clearly he might have put it a lot higher ahead of the election because things weren't looking that good. But where would you have put it pre-election, post-election? In other words, that binary option of disaster or Chernobyl versus potentially a road to growth.
Yeah, there is one change that took place, if I can qualify my answer, and that is the huge swing to MK away from the ANC. So pre-election, we didn't foresee that. Very few foresaw that. Although Frans Groenewald, yeah, I must say, I listened a lot to his podcasts and the polls that he was showing. It was showing that the ANC was going to go to 40, but not that MK, if I can remember correctly, would do so well. So after the election and in between the 2 weeks when the parties had to decide on, or the ANC had to decide who they agree, who they go into coalition with, the EFF option and the EFF or MK option, if we'd gone that route, I would say 80% we go Zimbabwe from here, because that would have just solidified the direction which the ANC was going. So pre the election, one can say the chances were very high, 60, 70, 80%. Now there's a real chance. It's a chance that we can reverse that. And so I would say now going Zimbabwe route, where we are now, is most probably it's less than 50. I would say it's now 40. The chance is still real. The probability still, ESF and MK will do what they can to discredit the DA and to derail the process. So, but the chances have improved dramatically. I would say, let's say, from 70 to 40.
Cookie Kooyman of Denker Capital.